Blog Talk Radio.
All right. We got a great Talking Hoops show this week. Should be a lot of fun. There's so much to talk about all over the Northwest. Plenty of hoops going on, let alone nationally. But certainly in the Northwest, we've got just a ton of great basketball that's been going on. And, we're going to be staying kind of east of the mountains this week a little bit. Just for starters here today, the Cougars have done real well this year. They're 6-0. They really surpassed just about everybody's predictions as far as what they're going to be able to do. I think Robert Franks is just one of the most pleasant surprises out there. Really doing a great job for them. We've got more to talk about then, but we're going to be bringing in a guest here from east of the mountains and from down in Boise. How are you doing today, Coach Burns? Mike Burns.
I'm doing very well, thank you.
It's great to have you on the show, just wanted to basically just say we've had some great shows with your former assistant John Riley, who's now down in California coaching down there, and I'm glad that we've got a new guy to work with and just keep us up on what's going on with Boise State and the Mountain West over here. And thanks again for agreeing to do the show, and we're obviously right in the thick of a really exciting non-conference schedule you guys are putting together and doing. And overall, how's your team looking so far?
Well, we got a great group and we're off to a good start. We're currently 5-1, our only loss being to Iowa State in the championship of the Puerto Rico Classic, the ESPN mm-hmm. tournament, which was actually held in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. So, the guys have done a good job, and we're actually playing, pretty well. In that Iowa State game, we played without our leading scorer and rebounder, Chandler Hutchinson, our senior, who he hit the floor pretty hard. Some of you might have saw that, cracked his head, and he was sidelined with a concussion. He actually missed our LMU game on this weekend as well. So, we're hoping he'll be back tomorrow night against Loyola Chicago, and they're a Beatty RPI team, 7-0 themselves. So that'll be a great game for us.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a tough team. It's not a team that you hear about a lot, but just over the years, they've just always had a good program there. So that's going to be something else. And then, of course, you're traveling to Oregon, and I know you don't want to talk about that game at this point, but obviously that's going to be a major challenge too. So getting back to what's been going on with your team, obviously the injury to Chandler's got a sting a little bit, and I hope that's going to be going well for him, that he's feeling a lot better. And you've had real balanced scoring though from Jessup, Hobbs, Chandler, and then of course Christian Sengfelder, all in double figures. And it seems like you guys are kind of back to your old set of tricks. You're shooting the three pretty well. You're getting good looks. It's basically the same story with the system there.
Well, it is, and I think that's what Coach Rice has done such an unbelievable job of over the years. Is sometimes the faces and names will change, but the style of play, the culture, the things about the program that make it successful year in and year out remain the same. And we've been able to shoot the ball pretty well from three. We're at a 40% clip thus far as a team. We're rebounding the ball very well. We're out rebounding our opponents by 9.5 rebounds a game, and that's a Leon Rice staple that his teams are always going to be, really good rebounding teams. And so, you combine those two things with the fact that, we like to really put an emphasis on player movement and ball movement, and that's what allows us to shoot as well as we do from three. I mean, those things all kind of connected together add up to success for us.
Yeah, it seems to me it really is a formula that's worked really well. And for those out there that aren't really aware of the success you guys have had, that are more focused on Pac-12 and things like that over here on this side of the mountains, The truth of the matter is you guys have been just a program in the Mountain West Conference over the past about 5 years, really, consistently, competing with teams that seem to be ranked higher going into the season and just finishing very strong, winning games that are close. And you guys have just done a great job and produced a lot of exciting moments. Basically a seven-man rotation of guys that are averaging over 20 minutes a game, and that seems like a pretty stable rotation. Is it? Do you think it's important to do that? I know a lot of coaches like to play a lot of players in the non-conference season and give guys a chance and such as that, and then tighten it up in conference play. Is that a philosophy that works better for you guys generally?
You know, it really does kind of depend. I mean, we've got a lot of confidence in every guy on our roster, and I know Coach Rice is willing to put anyone out there at a given time if the circumstance dictates that for our team's success. So it's kind of worked out this far, thus far, that, you know, we've got seven guys averaging over 20, but we've gotten some key contributions from, you know, David Wacker and Robin George and Cam Christian, you know, off the bench, and those guys have stepped up at different times and you know, done some big things for us. So, you know, it's not, I don't think it was a conscious plan to have the numbers work out that way. It's just, you know, the games, the flow of the games and the have kind of dictated that. So it's worked out well for us.
Well, it sounds like it. You know, I'm trying to pick you guys apart and figure out what it is that makes you so successful, and I'm grasping at straws, but I guess basically looking at just what's going on with your team, you mentioned rebounding. Justinian Jessup is averaging 7 rebounds a game. Chandler Hutchinson, who you mentioned before, is hurt right now, is averaging 8. It seems like it's not only a balanced scoring, but then you got Christian Sengfelder with 6 and Zach Haney with 6. He's kind of the guy the last on your scoring list of your main guys averaging over 20 minutes, but he's a real big contributor on the boards. And you're also shooting free throws really well, about 74% from the free throw line as a team, which is, I mean, that's really, really good. Is that by design too, that everyone's really working on the glass like that and a lot of guards are getting a lot of boards?
Yeah, that's one of the big, you know, one of the main emphasis of, you know, a Leon Rice coach basketball team is that they're going to be, they're going to really work hard on rebounding the ball. It's something we chart game by game, possession by possession for each player. So we're very detailed in our approach to that end of the game. And we know that it means a great deal to our success. And so we can't rely just on our 3s, 4s, and 5s to go get the ball off the backboard. We need our guards to rebound as well. And it's been kind of cool to see, you know, Justinian and, you know, Chandler, who plays a lot at the 3 spot for us, to see those two guys kind of heading up the charge on the glass. And, you know, then the big guys filling in behind them. But it is a concerted effort, an all-out team effort. And, you know, you referenced a little while ago kind of the success we've had over the last 5 or 6 years. I mean, rebounding has been a huge part. 3-point shooting, ball movement has been a huge part. And then when you look at the numbers in terms of that success, I mean, I don't think people really realize what Boise State basketball has accomplished. We've won, you know, in each of the last 5 seasons, we've won over 20 games. And there's only 27 other teams in all of Division I basketball that have done that consistently over that time span. So,
We
on a national level, we're winning at a high, high level, obviously. And then, you know, in our league, we're the only Mountain West team in the last 3 years with 11 or more conference wins in each of the last 3 seasons. So those are things we're really proud of, because it's that consistency on the glass, the consistency moving the ball, that lends to the consistency of being able to win games at a high, you know, high level every year, year in and year out.
Yeah, it seems like it. It really does seem like there's definitely some method to what you guys are doing over there that's working. I notice as I'm looking at your roster, there's a lot of guys listed as guards or guard forwards and not that many forwards. And one guy, obviously your center, Robin George, who's a big 6'11", 245-pound kid from Germany. But basically, do you basically a lot of your guards are tall too, by the way. We mentioned mm-hmm. Jessup being rebounding really high at 7 rebounds a game, but he is 6'6". Is it possible that I could just guess maybe that you like to recruit guys that can guard multiple positions and can be sort of inside outside mismatch problems for other teams, guys that maybe can't guard the three one night, maybe another team can't, do better taking inside? Do you like those kind of, I guess, I always think of George Karl and the Sonics when everybody was able to guard from Gary Payton up to Sam Perkins, everybody else on the floor. Do you like that kind of style?
Yeah, I think, one of the things Coach Rice really looks for is kind of complete players. And so we like guys that are skilled. Obviously, if we can get size with that skill, it's a huge advantage for us. And, it's not – and that's one of the things that's really hard this day and age in college basketball is to get complete players, because everybody's kind of looking for that. The game's changed that way. I mean, a lot of teams now, when you watch them, are the sum total of many interchangeable parts. And so we are very much that. We've got some multi-position guys in Jessup and Hutchinson and Hobbs are guys that can play, two or three different positions. And so that does create, hopefully for us, some matchup advantages at different times of the game.
Yeah, it sounds like it, really. It definitely does. I mean, I'm looking at your roster, and you got a couple of smaller guards that are, maybe your more prototypical size of, say, your typical, small, quick guard. But it's generally a roster that ranges between like 6'4" and 6'8". I'm really looking forward to seeing what you can do. And obviously, this Oregon game is a big game, but this Loyola game should be a lot of fun. Just looking at what's been going on with your league, though, I mean, obviously it's year in, year out been a really tough league, the Mountain West, and what's going on there. Can you give us just your take on just maybe some of the surprising kind of developments that have happened so far in the non-conference season as far as some of your conference opponents?
Well, I don't know that. I mean, it's not necessarily surprising, but we do, like, if you go by KenPom's rankings, we have 6 teams in the top 100 right now in our conference, and of those 6, UNLV is got the highest number. They're 95th, and they've also probably got the best freshman in the league by far, and probably a one and done pro. So mm-hmm. they, the league is just, you got Nevada, San Diego State, Wyoming, Fresno State, UNLV, all in addition to us that are in the top 100. And then Utah State, who's just outside the top 100, went over to Gonzaga minus their best player, Kobe McEwen, and led for, 25, 30 minutes of that game. So, it's crazy because night in, night out in this league, it is a dogfight. And we really, really feel like we got a super strong basketball league. Now, the fact of the matter is, we've been a one-bid league the last 2 seasons. And so this year, I would hope that those numbers will dictate that we do get, 2, maybe 3 teams into the NCAA tournament, because I think we're definitely deserving of that sort of consideration.
Yeah, I think that's an important statement. I really do. I think that the Mountain West is underrated. And, I'll say this, and I know that you're not saying it, but I think that the WCC is kind of overrated. I think they're really strong at the top, and they get such great performances nationally out of Gonzaga, and then, of course, BYU and St. Mary's, seem to get a lot of bump from some of the success they've had too. But I think the Mountain West deserves more publicity as being a really tough league out west, and I think that obviously the Pac-12 has really stepped up their game too. But looking at what Nevada's doing right now, I mean, there's some real strong teams. I saw San Diego State last night against Wazoo. Now, Wazoo ended up winning the game, but that San Diego State program is really strong, and the new coach is doesn't look like he's really missing a beat. If anything, he's got a little bit of fresh energy, you know. I just think the league's going to be a lot of fun to watch. And, again, you mentioned UNLV and such as that. What's it, you know, going up against all these players, you know, a lot of NBA, future NBA guys and stuff like that, you know, a lot of people think that what you need to do to compete with that is to recruit those types of NBA players, maybe some one and done guys, that kind of thing, to be able to compete with that level. How do you feel about that philosophy? Do you feel that you need to be able to get that type of high level pro, you know, elite talent, or do you think that working with players that are going to stick around 4 years and developing a system like you guys have been doing is more successful?
Well, I mean, you know, I think at the end of the day, it's kind of like biology. It's natural selection. I mean, you know, the whale's going to eat the dolphin, the dolphin's going to eat the tuna, and right on down the line. And we're not a whale by any stretch. I mean, would we love to have the big left-handed kid, Marvin Bagley, that Duke has? Yes, we would, but we can't get those sort of guys. So what we have to do, the NBA guys that are going to come out of Boise State University are going to be the Chandler Hutchinsons of the world, a guy who at 6'7", you know, 6'8", in high school was a little under-recruited. We got him in here. We developed him. We've turned him into, you know, what hopefully for his sake and for our sake will be an NBA draft pick. And that's been predicated on, you know, 3-4 years of really hard work. And so, we don't have a means – recruiting wise to go out and attract that sort of talent. That's just the hard, cold facts. I mean, there's going to be instances where maybe we could get, you know, lucky and we find the right kid at the right time. But the reality is we're going to have to recruit really solid and skilled players who are great human beings, high character guys that are really want to invest in their game and work to try to get to that level. And, you know, Chandler's one of those guys who's been able to do that. And I think he'll, you know, obviously he's going to have an outstanding senior season for us, and we hope that he'll get that opportunity at the next level.
Yeah, exactly. Do you think that there's some disadvantage with promoting yourself? A lot of people here in the Seattle area have been saying this about Lorenzo and what he did at Washington, and I don't agree with it. I think Washington is a little bit different type of a program to recruit to than Boise State, and it's a different kind of an environment over here in the Seattle area. And I think that just in general, the league, things are different. But do you think that when everybody on your team thinks that they're going to be an NBA guy, do you think that's disruptive to a team's a focus on maybe team play and the longer picture, if everyone's thinking about their minutes and their stats and things like that, do you think that's a problem, can be a problem for a coaching staff?
Well, I mean, I think anytime you got a lot of, you know, supposedly high level guys or 4 or 5 star guys, you know, obviously there's going to be expectations that they have about what they think they should be able to contribute. I know one of the great things Coach Romar did when he got to the University of Washington is he recruited his backyard. And I'm from Seattle, so Seattle basketball is near and dear to my heart. And I think if you look back at the high-level guys that he recruited, when he got those guys in Seattle, they played their asses off, and they were great players for the University of Washington and won a lot of games. I think
that's true.
You know, in the past few years, there are some guys that he got that were outstanding talents, but, you know, maybe they didn't have, you know, whatever the intangibles were that allowed, you know, the Brandon Roys and the Will Conroys and the Nate Robinsons and those sort of guys to win as many games as they did. So I think, you know, I think it's all of those things are variables. And, you know, like I said, I'm a Seattle guy, and I believe wholeheartedly in basketball in the state of Washington, specifically, you know, in Seattle. And there's been a lot of great players that have come from there, and I think they've been tough and they're winners. And that's kind of what, you know, we try to recruit here at Boise. We want tough kids that are winners and put the success of the team first. And I think there are a lot of those guys out there that are 4 or 5 star guys that are that way. And that's kind of what makes some of them that. And you just got to find them and hopefully get the right, you know, combination of those guys together on the floor. And if you do, I think, you know, the process of getting that done will take care of the winning and losing.
You know, I know that you need to wrap it up here, but I was going to say that that, you know, one thing that John really was doing was he was really working the Seattle-Tacoma area in Western Washington recruiting-wise. Is it possible that you're going to be doing a lot of that for the Bronco program now that he's moved on?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's where I grew up. That's where I'm from. I mean, the high school coaches, some of my best friends in all of basketball are the high school and junior college coaches in the Puget Sound area. I mean, those are my guys, you know,
cool.
They're guys that I, you know, grew up with in the coaching profession. And so they've helped me tremendously over the years. And, you know, a lot of the best players that I've ever recruited during my coaching career have been from the Seattle area. So, you know, we will definitely be looking forward to having a chance to do that at BSU as time moves forward and into the future. And, you know, home is where the heart is, and it's also where a lot of times you're most comfortable. So I'm very comfortable up in that area recruiting players.
Well, there's certainly a lot of good players coming up right now. That's another problem I think that Lorenzo had, was that he was getting a lot of great players from the you know, Puget Sound area. Isaiah Thomas, and they just kind of kept on coming for a while, and then it really kind of slowed down. There were still some good players, but it became a lot more competitive to get all the good guys, and he kind of struggled there, but now it's kind of coming back strong again, and I wish you a lot of luck in picking up the right kind of guys for what you guys are doing out there, Mike, and I'll be looking forward to seeing how you're doing against Loyola here coming up. And I've obviously down the road with conference play. I hope to have you on again maybe when we get closer into the conference schedule and maybe talk a little bit more about what's going on with the conference race.
Yeah, no, I'd love to. Appreciate your time and let me talk about Bronco basketball.
Hey, it's a lot of fun to watch, man. So let's keep in touch, and we'll talk to you soon, Mike. And Coach Burns from Boise State, we'll see you soon. Take care.
Thank you.
Well, all right. Well, that was great. It was great to talk to Coach Burns, and I think he's obviously got a clear focus on what they're trying to do down there, and they've just done great stuff. I mean, it's a really fun team to watch, and I mean this game coming up against Loyola should be a really good one. I'm not sure if it's on TV or what's going on with that. I'll check on that right now, but I think realistically, you're going to have a chance to see them. It is on TV, so check that out. And that's going to be coming up tomorrow night, Tuesday night. Of course, a lot of eyes are going to be on the Huskies playing Kennesaw State here to see if they can get another win. They're 4-2. They got a couple of close wins at home, sort of on the backs of Jalen Noel seemed like really was the guy that willed them to the win against Seattle U, and then last night too. I mean, against University of California Davis. You know, that I thought the Seattle U game was really close, and I thought Seattle U played great. I was a little disappointed that the refs were so made it so tough on Seattle U down the last maybe two, you know, like there was three plays that really turned the tides, you know, on that game, you know, and a lot of my UW friends that look to me for UW loyalty are going to say that I'm a Benedict Arnold here, but I'm really not. I'm just being honest, and I thought that was kind of a weird thing. But the other side of it is that, you know, Jalen Noel is really stepping up, and he's averaging over 20 points a game. He's just got a lot going on right now that's really helping them out. So, you know, I get it. He was a Romar recruit and a Will Conroy guy, I think, more than that too. And they were able to get him to stay at home, and it's obviously helping out UW to have that kind of talent. And I sadly, you know, have to kind of lament that, you know, if I look at what Jontay Porter did last night, he's playing on a team with not much talent over there in Missouri. It was a 9-win team last year, and Blake Harris is kind of having sort of a little bit of trouble. He's struggling. He's showing a lot of promise. He had like a 9 assists one turnover game against Long Beach State, but he's followed it up with a couple of shaky outings for some reason. I'm not sure what the reason is, if it's there's a health issue or something's going on, but he's not getting the playing time, and he's kind of coming in weird spots in the games. So, you know, but when Jonte's in there, they just look so good. I can just see Jonte Porter really helping out this UW team. Not to mention Dejon Davis, who's, you know, playing a lot of minutes for Stanford. He's also struggling with some sort of youth issues, but I think he would definitely help what Washington's doing. You know, so I look at that and I think to myself, you know, and then of course there's Michael Porter Jr., who's, according to, you know, a lot of people's estimation, going to sit out for the rest of the year. I think he'll probably make an attempt to come back at some point. But, you know, that obviously would have hurt Husky fans had he been at UW, and I think it could have possibly caused, you know, Lorenzo his job had they given him another year. You know, then again, does he get hurt if he's here? You know, it's all ifs and who knows what, you know. But Jonte just looks, like I said, he's really coming into what I consider, you know, just coming into being the kind of player that he's going to become. And I just think it's a high level of player, a guy that's going to play in the NBA and for many years if he stays healthy and keeps going in the direction he's going. He just does everything right. Reminds me a little bit of Tim Duncan. Reminds me a little bit of Kevin Love. Reminds me a little bit of Sam Perkins. He's just got so much going for him, and it's just so sad to see that. You know, what happened there with Lorenzo. And now you're looking at a situation where, you know, I mean, you look at the overall scope of Washington basketball, and prior to Lorenzo, there's like 3 first-round draft picks. But since Lorenzo, there's like 15 millionaires, and then he signed or would have signed Jonte. So you figure there's 17 guys who are, you know, first round pick. I think Jonte's going to be a top 5 pick. Some people are saying top 10, top 20. I think he's going to be that high. But I do think he's going to play a couple of years. He's so young. He's maybe even, you know, I think 2 years. So the thing is, you know, you get first round picks. You get NBA draft picks and guys that make it in NBA who don't get drafted, like Justin Holliday, who's leading the Chicago Bulls in minutes right now. I mean, you get those kind of guys, you're going to be able to compete with these other teams in the Pac-12 that when it's all said and done, and I'm not talking about here in November, I'm talking about in March when the chips are down, those teams that are going to be on top of that very tough league are going to be teams that have got incredible talent. And Oregon's going to be there. Arizona's definitely going to be there. I don't care what anybody says about this week and what happened. You know, I think USC is going to be there, and even despite their loss to Texas A&M last night, I think the UCLA is going to be there. I think they'll probably get their 3 freshmen back, and in the meantime, this team is growing and maturing, and guys like Aaron Holiday, Prince Ali, Thomas Welsh are a solid veteran core, and others, and then they've got some great freshmen too. And they're going to be on top of the league, and they're going to make the tournament. And that's what you got to be able to do is compete with those kind of teams that when they all pull it together, all the scouting's done, all the preparation, all the non-conference play where they play lots of guys and try lots of things, and you get into conference play and the chips are down, and those big games at Heck Ed or Pauley Pavilion or, you know, McHale Court or whatever, you know, Matthew Knight Arena, you know, those kind of nights is when this is all decided. It's not decided, you know, in November at some tournament. That's when Gonzaga's year is decided, because if they don't win those games, they don't get in the tournament unless they dominate their league. You know, of course they do that anyway, but basically what I'm saying is that In the Pac-12, that's when those big games, those big Pac-12 games, that's when it's decided. And then those teams go on, because they're so tuned up for that Pac-12 schedule, to go on and really play well in the tournament. And last year we had, you know, 4 teams win 2 games in the NCAA tournament out of the Pac-12. So you know, and three in the Sweet 16 and two in the Elite Eight and one in the Final Four. So in order to do that, it's no coincidence that all those teams that won that have a lot of big-time players that are, you know, NBA level or just below that, major professional, you know, level players. And Oregon specializes in getting the guys that are the just below that. And now they're starting to get the five-star guys too. So, but in the case of Oregon, getting like everyone they want, whenever they want kind of thing. But, you know, the UW's, I don't know what their approach is going to be with Mike Hopkins, the kind of guys they're offering, kind of guys they're bringing in. It reminds me of a team that's kind of, we'll see what these guys actually do, but I don't think I'm naive enough to think that it's, that any of these guys are going to be able to compete on that level. I think they're really trying to put together a program to be a, you know, middle of the road to low end program, kind of like what Wazoo's doing now. Wazoo's got a great team. They're doing well. They're performing well. They're playing well together. They're starting to get some experience. They're getting a little system going. They're putting up, you know, they're putting up a lot of shots, and it's exciting basketball. But are they going to really be able to beat, you know, Arizona in March, you know, or UCLA or Oregon? You know, we're talking about teams with a bunch of big guys. We're talking about teams with a bunch of really athletic guys. And, you know, when it all comes down to it, it's a game of attrition. It's a game of wearing down your opponent. That's when Washington was good, when they had, like, 10 good guys that they could just wear teams out and win games, you know, in the last 5 minutes, because guys were tired, guys were in foul trouble, and they were able to, you know, they were able to win. So prevail was the word I was looking for. So, you know, that's what we're dealing with here, I think. And Lorenzo understood that's why he went out and got all those recruits. And that's why he was continuing. He had all this recruiting going to really be able to control that Northwest. I just don't see Hopkins doing that right now. He's not controlling the Northwest. He didn't get Kevin Porter. He didn't get Jerron Brooks. He's not getting the guys that are the big recruits from the Seattle area. He got the one guy, you know, Jalen Noel, who, you know, decided to stay, but he lost the other four. And, you know, so we'll see what happens. But like I said, I think there's just some programs that are content with, you know, being, you know, disciplined and well-coached and, you know, just focused on having an experienced team and a system and all that good stuff that you talk about. But is that going to win in the Pac-12? It might win in the Big Sky. It, of course, would win the Big Sky. It will win in the WCC. You know, how are you going to get past Gonzaga? That's the problem there. It will win in the Mountain West too. It works. But when you talk, maybe not some years, but you talk about the Pac-12 and what you're up against there, it just seems like it has very little chance of winning and very little chance of really getting into the NCAA tournament. So by the same token that you want to fire Romar because he hasn't been in the tournament for so many years or whatever, he was at least close. He was within one game, like three of those 5-6 years. And then he won the title outright and didn't get picked as an at-large bid in the other one. So, you know, I just think that people have unrealistic views of what it really takes to do what they expected Romar to do. They're just completely divorced from the reality of what they want, what they expect, what they see others doing, like Oregon, like Gonzaga here in the Northwest, and what you can do at UW, where you can't get grad transfers in, you really have a hard time getting JC transfers in. You know, there's a variety of issues with getting into UW and the kind of students that you can get in, freshmen, any kind of transfer, that they don't have at Oregon, that they don't have at Gonzaga. So, you know, and then just beyond that, you know, are you going to be able to compete
at that level, I mean, you sure you can put together a team that's going to win and play well together. And Romar didn't do the greatest job of doing that, to be honest, at times. I think he was focused on other issues, which were important issues, like getting guys like Michael Porter and DeJounte Murray. I mean, DeJounte Murray doesn't go to UW, I don't think, you know, with you know, the way things are now. I think he wanted to, you know, I think there was a lot of system in place that really helped push him to UW. And I think that, you know, Coach Hopkins is having to rebuild that system. And I don't know if it's going to be something that he's going to be able to do before he moves on to the next challenge, which is, you know, that's, I mean, what, you know, why would Mike Hopkins not take a job at Syracuse? That's my question. There's no, to me, there's no reason for it at all. You know, or a job at, you know, a major elite level basketball program like UConn or North Carolina or, you know, Kansas. There's just no way in the world he wouldn't take one of those kinds of jobs. Well, that's the kind of job Syracuse is. So, you know, Jim Boeheim is really old. He's going to retire at some point, bless his soul. Okay, so, you know, so what, we got rid of Romar, we got rid of the guy that brought in, you know, five times as many NBA draft picks as it's ever happened in the history of the NBA draft, in the history of Washington basketball, just to, for what? So I don't quite understand that. It's odd. I wonder if someone's trying to call me. This is Jim.
Hello?
Hello, this is Jim. I just don't know what happened. I was not seeing you on the program board, and I hope that it's not such a big gap in the show that the listeners are going to be all, I'll try to explain it when I put it up on the podcast, but everything's great. We got you on the line. It's amazing. I don't understand that. It just didn't show on the queue. So, I really appreciate you calling in, Coach Earlywine, and let's get right in here because we're getting a little late start. I just wanted to say, you know, hey, your team's doing fine. You went up to Alaska and won 2 out of 3, and, you know, it seems like things are going okay from outwardly. How are you feeling about things so far?
Well, you know, obviously we, you know, the loss up there in Alaska stung. You know, we got a 1-point lead with under 10 seconds to go. And, you know, our best player and you know, probably the best player in our league, the best shooter in our league, a 90% free throw shooter on the line. You know, and he missed the front end with 1-on-1, and they threw in a 3-pointer at the buzzer to beat us. And, you know, that stings. You know, we felt like we were the best team there and would have liked to have been the champions of the, you know, the final Great Alaska Shootout. You know, it was the longest running tournament in college basketball, in season tournament. And it was it's the final edition of it. And we went up there, you know, with the hopes of winning it and thought we had a legitimate chance and weren't able to get that accomplished. So we're, you know, a little bit disappointed.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like it was probably a little bit of a problem. You got a couple of good games out of it though, and you know, you beat a Santa Clara team that's obviously pretty tough. You know, there's a lot of things to look at that are nice. You beat a Cal Poly team that's also, you know, had some good years here recently. But you know, also Bakersfield's had some, you know, they're kind of a sneaky team. That's a pretty good program down there, and they're obviously going to be a team that's going to compete,
you know. I know it. They're good. You know, they've won 50 games the last 2 years. They're the defending WAC champions. They know how to win, and Coach Barnes gets them to play really hard. You know, and I'll be surprised if they're not battling it out right at the top of the WAC again this year. We, you know, when we released our schedule, you know, Coach Verlin said this is the toughest non-conference schedule we've had. We don't, you know, there may not be a lot of, you know, big name opponents on our, you know, but Nevada's the defending Mountain West champions. Bakersfield's the defending WAC champions. We got Irvine coming up here in a few weeks. They're the defending Big West champions. Western Michigan's picked by everybody to win the Mid-America Conference. Our, you know, our non-conference schedule is really tough. And you know, and then we've got Washington State, who's proven that they're pretty good this year. You know, they're undefeated right now. We got them coming up here in 10 days. So
yeah, that's going to be something else. I'll tell you that. Yeah.
Yeah, we've got our work cut out for us.
Yes, absolutely. That Washington State, I saw the game last night, the Washington State game as well, you know, against San Diego State. And, I mean, they just look great. I mean, he's really got a nice complement of guys who can run and gun. And Robert Franks is really turned into some kind of player all of a sudden. He showed some promise last year, as a lot of guys do towards the end of their sophomore years. And he's a junior now. He's really, really putting it into gear, and that's going to be a tough matchup for you guys. You guys got a really good team, a really veteran team, a lot of talent, a lot of guys that I've seen play because they're from the Northwest, from Seattle and from Portland and such. And tell us a little bit about your guys and how your team overall is coming into focus right now.
Well, it's been hard for us so far because we lost, you know, our best low post player, you know, Arkady McCurchin, a senior for us, who's our best back to the basket player. You know, we've lost him, and we're not sure when he'll be back. So kind of a week to week deal. He dislocated his kneecap, and you know, that loss, you know, hurts us. You know, you don't lose a starter like that, who's a senior and experienced, and you know, without feeling that, and you know, so it's been a little bit rough for us so far managing foul trouble on the front line, and playing three games in 4 days up in Alaska was really hard, particularly on Nate Sherwood. He's, you know, now he's, instead of spending, you know, a lot of his minutes guarding a four man, now he's guarding all of his minutes. He guards a five man, and he's giving away inches and pounds, and that wears you down. You know, when you're 210 pounds or 215 pounds, and you have to put your body on. You know, the kid from Santa Clara was 270. You know, and when you're battling guys like that, that wears you down. And he's, you know, so it's been hard on us so far. And you know, we're hopeful that, you know, maybe next week we'll have McCurchin back, but it could be after Christmas. You know, we just don't know at this point.
Yeah, I mean, you've got some real talent, guys, but like you say, with low post play, you know, sometimes being big means a lot, you know. It's just kind of when you get down low, you know. But obviously, you know, Perrion, Calendarets have just an incredible season. Some great highlights been out there circulating around the internet of his dunks and his speed and all that stuff. He's looking really, really good. And what can you say about the kind of play he's showing you right now?
Well, he played good in Alaska. He was named to the all tournament team up there, and you know, he started to look like the old Perrion Calendret, who was playing at a, you know, when he got hurt 2 years ago, you know, he was playing at a really high level. He was not only our leading scorer at that point, he was our leading rebounder, leading us in assists. He's our best perimeter defender. You know, and we started to see some of that up in Alaska. He shot the ball well. He turned it over a little bit more than he'd like to. You know, but he's missed the better part of two seasons. So you can't do that and come back. And especially when it's, you know, it's not like he had a separated shoulder or something, you know, they were lower leg injuries and, you know, where he couldn't work out. He couldn't run. He couldn't jump. They wouldn't let him, you know, for over 18 months. And, you know, that's hard on a guy. And so it's been a long road back for him. He's put in a ton of time and effort, you know, to try to get back, and it started to, you know, we started to see the results of that up in Alaska.
Yeah, sounds like it. And I think that obviously there's going to be some great things to come for him this year. We mentioned Victor Sanders. You know, he's right now your leading scorer. and, you know, shooting 87% from the free throw line, like you mentioned, you know, 51% from three. Here's a guy that, you know, is tall, is athletic. You know, he reminds me a little bit of a guy from Seattle, Doug Wren, that you might remember. Just mm-hmm. as far as the kind of game he can the kind of nights he can put on a team, if you know, and he's averaging over 21, he's averaging 22 points a game right now for you, one of the leading scorers in the country. You know, obviously he's got a lot of game ball to play still here in his senior season. What can you say about the progress that he's made over the course of his career over there at Idaho?
Well, he averaged 3 points a game as a freshman, you know, and it now nowadays when guys when that happens, guys transfer, you know. So, right. You know, credit to Vic. He's, you know, he's stayed the course. He's turned himself into, you know, a guy who drew a lot of NBA attention last year, put his name in the draft, and had a couple of teams bring him in for workouts. And in essence, they told him, you know, he had to improve his body. He had to get stronger. And to Vic's credit, he's about 10 or 11 pounds stronger, bigger and stronger right now than he was a year ago. And, you know, he obviously is really skilled. He can really shoot the ball. He shot 45% from the 3-point line a year ago. You know, and I think if I'm not mistaken, I could be off on this a little bit, but I think Vic was the, of all the guys in the country last year who made 100 3-pointers or more, Vic shot the third highest percentage of those guys. He shot 44% from three, and he's shooting it at over 50% this year. So, you know, I think everybody, you know, everybody knows what Vic can do, and, you know, that he can, that he's really skilled, that he can really shoot the ball. You know, what we've challenged Vic to affect the games in other ways besides shooting and scoring. You know, with his defense, with his passing, you know, to try to increase his assist totals and, you know, do some of the other things, like I said, that affect winning besides just shooting the ball. Cause we all know he can really do that. And hey, I'll tell you what, if you gave me the choice of you know, having a game on the line with a 1-point lead and one guy, you know, on the free throw line, to shoot a free throw of the front end of a 1-on-1, I'd take Victor Sanders every time. And
I know you would.
You know,
absolutely.
He missed that one. You know, and he feels bad about it. And he thinks he let the team down. And, you know, but everybody knows that one play doesn't cost you a game. And, you know, but I sure liked our chances with 8 seconds to go and a 1-point lead and him on the free throw line. And, you know, it didn't work out. You know, it didn't work out for us. You know, that happens in life.
Yeah, it's and sadly it does. It happens occasionally, and you just got to roll with it. And that's part of being a team, is that you got to stick together when things aren't going so well, and you got to stick together when things are. And that's just part, like anything in life, is what's one of the wonderful things about college basketball. And he was shooting 87% from the free throw line. I mean, anybody who knows basketball knows that that's going to be your guy. Then again, Nate Sherwood is shooting 96 so far this year, and again, you got him in a position where he's having a guard centers, and you're waiting to see if Art can get back and help in that regard. But he's having a really nice season. Tell us about what Nate has been doing, just overall to get his game to where it's at.
Yeah, he's done a terrific job, and you know, mostly he's shown like so many of the guys in our program, Jordan Scott, Perrion. You know, we have six guys in our program right now who have been here for either 4 or 5 years, and each one of them has shown, you know, they're, and none of them have taken a huge leap in it from 1 year to the next. They've all taken, you know, the normal, you know, made the normal progression, you know, from second year to third year. Nate's now in his fourth year of college basketball, and he's shooting, you know, 57 or 8% from the field, and I think 90 some from the free throw line. You know, and you know, his rebounding totals are a little deceiving, because they don't jump out at you. You know, I think he's averaging 5, you know, but he's our leading offensive rebounder. And the thing about Nate is Nate's a terrific blockout guy. You know, his guy doesn't get an offensive rebound. And, you know, so those rebounding totals may be, you know, maybe just the sheer number, the raw number may be a little misleading in terms of of how he's playing, because he blocks out every time. His man never gets an offensive rebound. I shouldn't say never, but rarely gets an offensive rebound. And so, I mean, he's playing great. You know, but we expected him to play great in his fourth year now. So,
right.
You know, he's doing kind of what we expected him to do.
Right. Well, and yet he's coming back for another year. So that's, you know,
yeah.
If all things stay together, that's, he's going to be a guy that's going to really help you lead down the road next year. But another guy that is, you know, maybe I think people in Seattle know about, you know, from Garfield High School, and who, you know, played over there at North Idaho College over in Coeur d'Alene, also is Brian Blake. And he's putting in a quite a year right now. He's averaging 9 points and 10 rebounds per game. He's basically your double-double machine for you. I mean, that's got to help right now with the way things are going for you guys. And he's very quietly become a really solid player.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he's been, you know, he's the one upperclassman that we have of our six seniors. He's the only one who hasn't been here for his entire career. You know, we and second year guys tend to make a significant improvement in our program. You know, they tend to, you know, not get, you know, the paralysis by analysis, you know, syndrome going, that they have in their first year, because of the complexity of what we do, especially offensively. And, you know, so he's, you know, we expected him to, you know, to make a pretty big step, and he has. His rebounding has been, you know, terrific, you know, getting over nine a game. And, you know, I think he can give us a little bit more on the offensive boards, you know, but 10 points and nine rebounds is pretty good.
Yeah, I would say so. That's, I think it's the other way around, but that's okay. It's like nine points and 10 rebounds is what I'm looking at right now, but that could have changed. No, it's 10 points and nine rebounds. You're the coach. I'm the radio fool. So here we go. 10 points, nine rebounds.
We'd take it either way.
Exactly. So you got a nice solid rotation of guys getting double figure minutes. You got basically, you know, if you count, you know, Ark, you got, you know, eight guys getting in double figure minutes right now. So it seems like your rotation is kind of sharp and coming together. And obviously, you know, when you get into conference play, and I mean, you got plenty of games going on right now, but you know, you want to probably tighten that up a little bit or whatever, keep it right around that seven, eight, whatever. But right now what's currently going on is that you got like a bunch of really challenging games cooking right now. And obviously the one that really jumps out, well, Nicola State is coming up right now, and that's a road game. So that's coming up here this weekend. So you guys are flying all the way down to Louisiana.
Yep, down to Louisiana.
And that's going to be a big challenge. And you've just got back from Alaska. So it's, you know, a lot of flying and going down there. And then you come back up here to play this Washington State. You know, I guess I'd be remiss if I wasn't curious what you thought of the Cougars. I know you don't want to talk about them too much because you got Nicholls State, but if you could tell us about the Cougars and Nicholls State, a little bit about both of those teams, so we get a better idea what you're going up against.
Yeah, Nicholls State has, you know, I'll deal with them first because we play them this weekend, and you know,
sure.
it's a tough road trip. It's gonna we spend literally the whole day Saturday. Trying to get to Thibodaux, Louisiana. We're going to leave here early in the morning. We've got a bus up to Spokane, fly to New Orleans, drive bus to Thibodaux, and we get in there. We're going to leave campus early in the morning, and we get to Thibodaux after 10 p.m. So it's, you know, right away, it's a huge challenge for us. And then Nicholls State is trying to piece things together. Their record right now is you know, their results haven't been I think what they would have hoped for, but they have 10 seniors. They had four transfers sitting out last year, including a guy who was ranked in the top 50 in the country coming out of high school. Went to a big point guard. Went to Maryland. Started 10 games as a freshman at Maryland. You know, so and then a transfer from Arizona State who we know, we saw in junior college, who's very good. A 7-foot transfer from Clemson. They have pieces to the puzzle that are really good. So it'll be challenging, you know, down there playing them. But it was, to be perfectly honest, that was the last game we scheduled. We didn't get our schedule done until the middle of September this year. We really didn't want to take a trip all the way to Louisiana to play. But the date, and we really wanted a home game when we came back from Alaska, but we couldn't find anybody to play us at home. And,
right.
So that was, that was the game we ended up with. They'll return the game here next year. So it's a challenge. It's a challenge in terms of their talent level and the road trip. And then we come back home and play Washington State, who obviously is playing really good right now. I haven't seen them play. I know they're undefeated.
They've been playing really well.
I know that they're, I've seen a couple of blurbs, and I know they're shooting the ball incredibly, incredibly well from the 3-point line.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I know Robo is playing, Robert Franks is playing, really good. We know him. He was a high school.
Of course,
He was, he's best friends with Arkady, with Ark.
Right.
We know Malachi really well. We recruited the heck out of Vontae Daniels. We know some of their, quite a bit of their personnel. And obviously they're playing good right now. You don't beat St. Mary's anytime, anywhere without being good. That was a heck of a win for them. And then to turn around and beat San Diego State down in Southern California. Diego State's a tradition. I mean, just a really, really good defensive team, and they hung 93 on them. So we know that's going to be quite a challenge. And then we got three games next week in a 7-day period. We come home from Louisiana, play Washington State, and then go right back on the road and go down and play Bakersfield in a rematch. That's going to be a tough week for us.
Yeah, it's definitely seems like a lot of challenges. I mean, the Bakersfield team that you just were snake bit by, it's like you got a lot of makeup ball to play with them for sure. That's going to be an interesting game too. I guess you guys have a interesting schedule. Like I said, a lot of really good teams that are challenging for sure. Yeah. And this Washington State team, I'm real impressed with what they're doing right now. Obviously, they're winning games, but the guys are shooting well. Not only are they shooting well from three, but they're also shooting well going to the basket. It's a fast pace. It's fun to watch, and I'm sure you're gonna see a team that's not really what you expect if you haven't really looked at them this year. They don't look like the same team the last few years with Ernie. They're fast moving. It's a fast pace. It reminds me more of the Washington Huskies from back in the day when they were scoring almost 85 points a game. There's tons and tons of possessions just running all over the court, and it's fun to watch, and a lot of new faces that are really interesting. The Skaggs guy is something else, and there's a couple other guys that really have surprised me too. So they're really a fun team. Pollard's looking good. It's a good team to watch. I know you're really aware of these guys though, because I mean, how could you not be with Moscow? For those of you out there who don't know, Moscow and Pullman are really close. I think it's like 5 miles apart. So these guys are basketball players. There's not a whole lot of other basketball players around. I'm sure they hang out a lot, I'm sure there's a lot of hanging out between the two teams and down in the Moscow Pullman area.
Yeah. And it's a big game here. It's the longest. I don't know if you're aware of this, the longest running continuous rivalry outside of the Ivy League. It's the fifth longest in the country, the fifth longest in the country, the longest west of the Mississippi. You would think that, Washington State or Oregon State or, UCLA,
right.
USC, you would think, but it's not. Idaho, Washington State is the longest running rivalry west of the Mississippi River. So it's a big game around here. Our challenge is to make sure, people would look at the Nichols State game as being a, quote unquote, trap game. That our guys are looking ahead to playing Washington State. We go down there and lay an egg, and we got to make, as coaches, we got to make sure that that doesn't happen.
Games
are too valuable.
We're not going to talk about
or do anything, relative to Washington State until after the game in Thibodaux on Sunday.
Oh yeah. It's gotta be a big game for you. Well, they got 10 seniors. That's, that's pretty amazing. That's going to be because you guys are a veteran team too, so that should be a really good game. So I'm looking forward to following that. And so I know we're running late here. Just wanted to a quick comment. I haven't had a chance to talk to you. I know you got some young players on your team, but we'll talk more about them maybe next time we talk to you. But what about the November signing period? What did you do, and what can you tell us about the players that you were able to bring into the program?
Yeah, we have a unique team this year, and we have six seniors and six freshmen, and so we've in recent years steered away from junior college guys a little bit, trying to build the program on high school guys and in particular high school guys from the Northwest. We've done that, and it's helped us. It's been successful, but we had to balance our classes a little bit. So we signed a couple of junior college guys, a junior college wing from Navarro Junior College in Texas, Jahlil Nails. He played his freshman year at Central Connecticut State and averaged 8 points as a freshman, shot 39% from three. He's a big, long, athletic wing who can shoot the ball. We thought we needed to add length and athletic ability to our perimeter. And so we signed him, and we signed a high school, a 6'7" high school three man from Atlanta, from Marietta, Georgia, actually, Sprayberry High School. His name's Kadeem Sam. And he's a 6'7" long, really skilled kid who can really shoot the ball. Who's a late developer, 6 foot as a sophomore in high school, then has grown and is now 6'7". And so, we're really happy with those two guys that we added on the wing. And then we wanted to continue to add to the front line and our size. We signed a high school, 6'10" high school kid from University High School in Spokane, Tanner Christensen, who we're really high on. He's made unbelievable progress in the last year. Now he's a Mormon kid who will leave right after high school and go on his LDS mission for 2 years. So he'll really be in the class of 2020 when he comes back off his mission. But we're really excited about him. And then we signed Tomas Domingos from the College of Southern Idaho, a junior college kid with 3 years to play, originally from Portugal. He's 7 foot and a really typical European. He's really skilled, can really shoot and pass. And so we're excited about our incoming class, and we're excited about the freshmen who are here right now with us, who are making progress. And the fans probably won't get a chance to see that progress being made this year because we have 8 returners and 6 seniors. And so it's hard for the freshmen to get minutes this year, but we're really happy with the 6 freshmen that we have right now.
Right. And you got Kamara, there's Chance Garvin, I see right here from over there in Eastern Washington. There's Geno West from Portland, a lot of familiar, places these kids are from. There's Jared Rodriguez, who's a big 6'8" kid from Glendale, Arizona. You've got Jarrett Kingman from Gig Harbor over here in Tacoma area. And you've got Cassius Smith, Smith Francisco from Arizona, who's 6'9",
he's
30 freshman. He's a big kid.
He's born. People will remember Rick Smith, who played many years in the NBA with the Indiana Pacers. Cassius is his nephew. And Rick is actually the legal guardian. And, he grew up in the Netherlands and then moved to Indiana, high school for his first 3 years of high school. And then went to his senior year of high school down in Phoenix, area. And he's a big, strong kid. And Scott Blakeney from Prosser High School
and from
the Tri-Cities, a big, strong kid who's, he's got a few minutes here and there for us this year, but we really like our freshman class that we have right now. But it'll probably be, next year before our fans get a chance to see significant extended minutes from those guys.
Yeah. It sounds to me like that's what's going on. You got some real good players coming up, and I noticed there's an accent on size, a lot of bigger players too, which is going to be fun to watch. And, Rick Smith's kid, and that's going to be his nephew. That's going to be, interesting to see what if we see a little bit of Rick Smith in his game. I wonder if he goes out there and plays with Rick.
You know
at
what?
All.
He's a new well, and part of the story with him, we're redshirting him, and he's he's had an ACL injury on both knees. One is a high school freshman, the other is as a junior, and so he's still trying to recover from the one his junior year. And he's not the new school big guy. He's a big guy who is really physical, understands who he is, and he goes down on the block. He's not trying to go out and shoot three pointers like a lot of big guys nowadays. He goes down on the block and punishes people. And
cool.
I think our fans are really going to like his physicality and his intensity level. When we get him on the floor next year.
Yeah, well, hopefully we'll see Ark back on the floor soon. And, looking forward to watching you guys play. It's going to be a lot of fun. Obviously, this Wazoo game is a big deal, but this Nicholas State game, the more you talk about it, the more interesting that looks, too. We've got some good games coming up, and I wish you a lot of luck. And obviously, we didn't even get a chance to touch on the Big Sky, but I want to talk to you again when we get into that sphere, and that league is really just doing incredible things this year, and I see a lot of real positives there. So let's stay in touch, Coach Earlywine, and let's do this again soon.
Okay, sounds good. Anytime.
I'm sorry about the mix-up with the technical thing. I don't know what the heck happened.
The program has given me some troubles
the last couple of weeks. I'm not sure what the deal is with maybe they have some new gear or something in the system somewhere. Anyway.
Okay. All right. Well,
thank you so much.
All right.
Thanks for coming to Talkin' Hoops. Coach Kirk Earlywine of Idaho Vandals. And this is Jim Bassnight. Another great week of Hoops Talk. And we'll see you next week. And always be a good sport. Be a good sport always, like the great Bob Robertson would say. We'll see you next week.